Please don't wait till it's too late. Call McIntyre Elder Law.
Falls, and you know, we work our entire lives, take care of ourselves, take care of our families, and you know, you want to know how to protect yourself. I would think a state. Well, how about what is the state plan? Does anybody know?
Protecting your home, your money.
Protecting home monies.
All the end of life documents.
End of life documents. Okay. I mean, estate planning, I would agree, is all that. And also about controlling what you have during your life, about making sure you have controls in place so you can manage assets, protect assets, plan for, heaven forbid, long-term care, if that were the case, right? Still stay in control of assets. You know, how do you pay for those things if they happen? Those are some of the things we're going to cover in tonight's presentation, okay? And I would say, if you have any questions, ask. Raise your hand, scream something out, throw something at me. We can talk about it. I'm fine with it, okay? I'm Greg McIntyre. I'm an estate planning and elder law attorney. That's all I do. If you ask me how to get out of a speeding ticket, I know a guy. I do, but I can refer you to, but I'm not him, all right? But anything in the realm of estate planning, elder law, I can answer. If I don't have the answer, I'll get you. Okay, because I know where to look. The law is a big place, so we try to stay in our lane and our firm. Our firm is named McIntyre Elder Law. I am McIntyre, but we have some great and talented attorneys. I try to employ folks or hire team members that are better than me. That's worked out really well for us. Okay. And I'm a proud member of Elder Council, which is the national group of elder law attorneys. Elder law is a subset of estate planning. I cover the realm of estate planning, but certainly have a focus in elder law. There's no doubt about it. And there's certain factors to consider as we age, all right, and things that we might be worried about, that we might need to look out for. And you may have some questions on those things tonight. I named it McIntyre Elder Law so that not only would I communicate what we did, but also so I would stay within that lane and focus just on that area and not be tempted to take outside cases. But still people come in and ask me who my partner, Mr. Elder, is. I get that question on a regular basis. So I think estate planning and elder law is really about helping people. It makes me feel great when I help save someone's retirement, their home, give them options that they didn't know they already had. So I'm sure that each one of you had careers, professions, have careers, in which you help people. And I know it makes you feel great when you help people. So doing this makes me feel great. So not only, I mean, I know what I do, but sometimes, even the things we love to do can become a job, okay? So when I'm grinding on a case late at night, my why is what's more important. So this is a little about my why, and I just wanted to tell you about that. And not get blocked by the podium. So my why is really, I'm sure you guys all have your whys. My why, from estate planning and elder law, one is my grandfather, Worth McIntyre. He's my dad's dad. Very close to all my grandparents. But he in particular spent about 14 or so years in assisted living care. And it really took everything that he had, literally. Even a small farm that he was able to buy. And in the end, his truck. So, which he swapped trucks every couple of weeks. And he lived to be about 99, okay? And I'm maybe a few years younger there. You know, he's certainly a big why for me. Another reason is these six children. These are my children. This photo is probably a couple of years old. She's now 14. He's in law school. He's a first-year law student. He graduates high school this year. And the others have grown as well and into their dance and everything else. You know? If you want a reason to really work, have six children. Does anybody in here have six children or more? Am I the winner on that?
Most of them I call a winner.
Depending on which way you look at it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I've got one that's made it through undergrad and then grad school right now. Five more to go. So, and then that's me and my beautiful wife, Steph. So she is certainly a why for me and why daddy has to work, right? So I know she called me earlier and said, "You're doing a presentation tonight. I'm cooking dinner." I said, "Okay." She knew I was doing it. But really, the way we've broken down estate planning and how we'll get into it is the pre-planning side, which I really call pre-planning more than estate planning. Who do you think scores better on the test? People who plan ahead, people who study for the test way ahead of time, do their homework, or which is representative, by the way, of, I'll get backwards, I'm going to show you this. Of this son, the one that's in law school, both extremely talented, extremely smart, great kids. They have much different interests. This one plans ahead. He probably has his homework done a month ahead of time, easily. He had already read all the books on law school and law books and what it was like to be in law school before he went to law school. And this one, who is more of a in the moment, he's extremely funny, and he's a genius, he loves acting and wants to be a director. But when it comes to sitting down and studying and doing his homework sometimes, does not plan ahead. Who do you think scores better on tests or has less anxiety and less problems?
In
school.
Plan.
With his teachers. Yeah, the plan. Absolutely. All the teachers love Tucker. Okay, they do. But not because he plans ahead. Okay? Because he's a funny kid. So that's the state plan. Planning ahead. Costs a lot less money, time, effort, and also, I would say, offers a large dose of peace of mind that you know where you're going, what you're doing, and that you've handled those things. We also have a benefits planning department. This is sometimes for folks who are struggling with the high cost of long-term care, which can be astronomical, by the way, if you don't have a plan in place to pay for that. And we handle benefits planning within that department and can even save assets in a pinch, in an emergency, okay? And we do. Very talented people in that department. Also, we handle veterans, aid attendants, pension benefits. I'm a veteran. Do we have any veterans in this room of the armed forces? No. Love our vets, okay? And so we help our vets add an additional pension when they need it, usually when they need CARES, when that pension is available, if they meet certain criteria. And also probate. That's for what happens after we pass away, probate and estate administration. We handle litigation for cases in that department as well, guardianship for people who don't have appointed agents under financial or healthcare powers of attorney, and the family or someone else has to go after guardianship for them. We handle that within that department. Who knows what probate is?
Heard of it,
I always get a chuckle when people tell me I have a will, so I'm not going to go through probate. So a will, the entire process, a will passes or retitles assets to your heirs is through the court probate process. That's what it is. So even though I spend most of my time over here preaching about ways to handle things cleaner, quicker, avoid claims that might be hanging out there. If heaven forbid you were to move on and pass away, this is by far our biggest department. We probably have 300 probate cases going on statewide right now. And probate isn't the devil that some people make it out to be, but it can have some pitfalls, and we can go through those too in our discussion. Okay. What do you think some of the pitfalls of probate might be?
Takes forever.
It's time. It takes about a fair amount of time.
You got everything tied up.
It's kind of tied up in limbo for a while. Yeah, that's true. Why does it take so long?
Got to go through the court.
So you got to go through the court system. Everything has to be approved by a judge or clerk, right? And returned, even if you're using an attorney. Sometimes you don't have a lot of availability. Those clerks or judges, sometimes they have a stack of files on their desk, yay high, or during COVID, and they've been staffed lightly, but they're super backed up right now. And you know, I feel for them. But it also puts a lot of pressure on us and our clients, right, trying to move things along time. So that's true. There's also a built-in 90-day window during the probate process where you publish in the paper for 4 consecutive weeks a notice to creditors. And you have to wait 90 days for any, and then check the file in the end to see if any claims have come in. So it's frozen for 90 days in there in the middle. Regardless, so that's 3 months right there.
So then, can I ask you a question about
sure.
that? Because you said you wanted a question. So
oh, yes.
When my dad passed away, my mother was already gone.
Sure.
He was in a nursing home, as you said, cost $1 million. Going through all of his assets.
Sure.
He had...
I wish you could have called me.
Didn't know you. So, didn't go to probate. He didn't have any property. He didn't have assets, but he had heirs set up for when he passed away for those assets. So...
Yeah.
Just as beneficiaries?
So beneficiaries.
Yeah.
Sure.
I was handling everything, so when he passed away, basically I let the financial guy know. They sent checks out to everybody and
so he had payable on death beneficiaries on financial assets.
On everything. Yeah.
Such as insurance products have beneficiaries.
Yeah.
IRAs, 401ks,
annuities,
that's an insurance product.
That, yeah.
Can have beneficiaries.
Right, so nothing ever went to probate. I was told.
Okay.
I was supposed to. They said if he doesn't have any outstanding debts and doesn't have any property, then you don't have to go to probate.
What if he did have outstanding debts? Would he have had to pay it?
I think so. Out of his assets. So I don't know the question of that. I was taking care of all of everything, so he didn't owe anybody anything.
Right. The only place that a creditor can attach a lien in North Carolina, including the state of North Carolina, is within that 90-day window during the probate process.
So we never talked to the courts. We never did anything.
Yeah.
But it wasn't North Carolina.
Right, Massachusetts. But
yeah.
I was down here in Atlanta.
Sure.
So.
But I would agree in North Carolina.
So is that how it comes into play? If you don't have property, you don't owe anything, then it doesn't have to go to probate, or it's not an act thing?
So if you have your beneficiary set up correctly on financial assets, I agree. That is a way to avoid probate.
Okay.
But I don't know that the answer is just to not own any real estate, not because people do own real estate. They own homes.
Well, I mean, for ourselves, me and my wife. And
sure.
We have a home. I hope we have a home when it gets to that point. But
yeah. But there's tons of ways to avoid probate with other assets that don't readily have beneficiaries attached as well. Yeah, absolutely. Certainly not a bad way to set that. But with all your assets, not just your IRA and 401k. Yes?
Does a trust make a difference to avoid probate?
A trust does not go through. Assets that are held within the trust while you're alive does not go through probate. Or the trust you set up during your life could be a beneficiary of other, say, financial or insurance assets that would go into the trust as well to be controlled the way you wanted to distribute them. To beneficiaries. The term beneficiary comes from trust draft, not from insurance company or financial products. Okay? That's where that originates. So your trustee is charged legally, has a fiduciary duty to carry out your wishes as you've written into the trust. Right? You might have people you don't want to give large sums of money to at once, but you might want to take care of them over a series of years. Trust can do that. You might have charities that you want to give to. Trust can do that too. You might want to You might have a farm that's been in the family for 200 years, and you want it to stay a farm. Trust can do that as well.
Okay? You don't have a house, isn't
it? Certainly a house.
Trust, is that probably?
It could be. It just depends on what your goals are. Okay? Asset level goals, and if a trust is the right answer. Deed planning can be equally as effective and less costly. Okay? But it just depends. Sometimes a trust is the right answer. I would agree. Okay? Just depends. Everybody's plan, what you're seeing is everybody's plan is individual. There's no cookie cutter plan for folks. Okay? And that's what we do in estate planning. To sit down individually and create a plan. So we kind of dove in the deep end a little bit, which I'm prone to do. But I'm going to come back and I'm going to build our foundations before we put the roof on. Okay? We're going to talk about foundational work first and the importance of foundational work, which is as much about taking care of you during your life as if you were to pass away. Okay? So we'll start there. With the general durable power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, living will, and will. That's what I call foundations. Okay. So the general durable power of attorney. The general durable power of attorney. Do you know what that's for? Can someone tell me what it's for or what it does? General durable power of attorney.
Healthcare and your financial needs.
I heard healthcare and financial. Okay.
Put somebody in charge of it.
Put somebody in charge of it. The general durable power of attorney, street name, is really a financial power of attorney. Okay, only. Right? Healthcare, totally separate, totally different. Okay? Not part of the same part of the statutes or same thing. What's that?
It's the durable form.
Durability. So it has a durability clause. With the powers of attorney are very complicated documents. People muck those up all the time. Right? They really do. All right? And it really hurts them when they need it. The general durable power of attorney and the durability clause ensures that it survives incompetency, incapacity, mental disability, or lapse of time. So when you need it, and you might be laid up in the hospital or incompetent for a time period or the long haul, you know, incapacitated, and you need somebody to act for you, to pay the bills, to access financial assets, to pay for care, to shield or protect assets, do whatever needs to be done, to be valid, it has to have a durability clause to survive that. Okay? So that's what a durability clause is. It's within the document, or it needs to be within the document. I'm a big fan of plain verbatim naming, so it's a general, durable power of attorney. It's general, covers most any type of financial transaction or asset that you can handle yourself. So you're empowering an agent to also be able to help you with that. You don't give up any power to handle your own affairs. You're just saying, if I'm in a condition where I can't handle my own affairs, if I have someone I trust 100%, then that person can step in and handle them if I need them to. Okay? So,
I can see that it get a little messy, or maybe explain how it would, if, say, some, you know, whoever that assigned person is, says, well, you're in the hospital, and I don't think you're, you know, of your sound mind right now.
That's sure.
That, so I'm going to start making these decisions. But the person in question goes, wait a minute. No, I can't. So where's the delineating line there?
Well, you can program them that way.
Yeah.
They're very complicated documents. I would call that, if you were worried about that, all right, so there's a few reasons why people are worried about what he said. What's your name?
Barry.
Barry said, look, if you're in the hospital, you can't make your own decisions, or you can't get out, take care of things. I know when I have a bug or a virus, I just feel like laying on the couch. You know, I feel like doing anything. And this other person steps in and starts making the decisions financially. And you're like, well, wait a second, right? I don't want you to do that, right? So how do you, he said delineate, but how do you draw that line or how do you prevent that? Number one, there's a general durable power of attorney that's live and active recorded at the Register of Deeds, and can be used. There's also documents called springing powers of attorney. So we can draft that document to be springing, so it just springs to life and has power if, say, you're found to be incompetent, incapacitated, let's say incompetent, by one physician. Or you might say, hey, I want two physicians to find me incompetent before this person has that power to act. Okay? So that's a way. Okay? That's a legal, bright line way to do it. However, that's usually not what's going on when people come and they want a springing power of attorney, or they're really worried about that. What are people really worried about generally when they're wary about letting someone else handle finances? They're going to take all their money, fraud, those things. What is that a real indication of? You got the wrong person. That's always what it is. It's very, you don't trust the person really that you're thinking about appointing. So you know what I say? Should you? Yeah, that would be dumb to appoint that person. Okay? If that person is going to, if you're worried that when you're laid up in the hospital or maybe incompetent, incapacitated, that person is going to rip you off, they're absolutely done. I mean, if you're worried they're going to rip you off like now and you're still competent or something, if you are incompetent or in a nursing home or something like that, they're going to absolutely rip you off. Now, there's a legal fiduciary duty built in to the power of attorney that makes it illegal for them to act not in your best interest and in good faith for you. Okay? However, I mean, you know, should I trust the person that I hand the keys to the kingdom, the keys to my, you know, every financial asset I have to handle for me if I need to, if I need that help? Should I appoint someone I don't trust 100%? Never. Ever. So I would advise against that. If you don't, most people do have people they trust in their life. Sometimes those are children. Sometimes they're not. But if you don't have someone in your life that you trust that way, that you trust 100%, then I would say don't appoint anyone. That's what guardianship is for. What happens if I become incompetent, incapacitated, I don't have a general durable power of attorney that names my wife my primary and my son my secondary? What happens to all our real estate holdings that we have? What happens to my retirement account that's mine alone that she can't access? Oh, but I'm a beneficiary. That doesn't matter. That matters when you're dead. Okay? When I'm living, right? If you're a beneficiary. You know, oh, but she's my wife. That doesn't matter either. If it's a sole account or it's a retirement account or it's real estate that we even own together. She ain't doing anything with it, taking loans out on it or selling it or giving it away without me signing off. She can only get what she has. And that's not all the interest in my property. Right? So what happens in that situation if I haven't given her that access? I haven't trusted her with that. What does she have to do to get access to really a lot of the bulk of the financial estate? Go to court. And pursue what?
I said it earlier.
Guardianship. That's right, guardianship. Probate's after I'm dead. I'm not dead yet. Okay. Don't put me in the ground. So, guardianship, right? So, guardianship is a process where you petition the court to find someone incompetent. If they are found incompetent, then the second part of that hearing is, should the person that's petitioning the court, is the person a suitable guardian? For financial assets, for health care, okay? For health care decisions. And sometimes the court may say, no, that's not a suitable person. Or if there's a fight amongst the family as to who the suitable person should be, what the court will usually do is appoint some stinking attorney, okay, to be the guardian over the estate. And perhaps over the personal decisions like where that person resides and has care. So, if you want to avoid that, you can be proactive and appoint the people that you want to appoint. Should you appoint one person to handle those affairs, What if that person dies before you? Or doesn't want to do it at that point? It's too much going on in their lives. Or anything else, life happens, right? Then you're stuck. Should you appoint a sub? You can. You can go as deep on the bench as you want to. You don't have to. But certainly, you know, thinking if you have multiple people that are suitable, or you have multiple, say, children that you trust, you could appoint them to serve at the same level, to act together or separately, jointly or separately. Okay? So, especially if your family gets along. Okay? I wouldn't appoint two kids who don't get along. Sometimes it's hard for my six kids to reach a decision. All right? If you believe it, they wouldn't agree that that was blue. They'd end up arguing and like rolling around on the floor, you know, break off the factions or something. So that's a financial power of attorney. To use it, it really needs to be recorded in the county where you reside, at the register of deeds. Okay? There's a lot that goes into thinking about how you want to draft the power of attorney. I think it's the most important document you can have in your estate planning arsenal. More important than your will. Because a will only has power when? When you're dead. And I care about you while you're alive. And I see so many people come to me in our firm that want us to help protect assets, pay for care, activate benefits. And the first question we ask, does this person have a general durable power of attorney that gives you the authority to legally act for them to do what you're asking us to do? And if they don't, guardianship. Then we're begging the courts to do what we want to do. We're petitioning the courts and asking the courts, because then they're over the money and over any spending. So, which could be okay if you don't have anybody you trust, right? But it might not go down and happen the way you would want it to, right, with your financial assets and affairs. So, extremely important document. I say that, and then does anybody have any questions about a general durable power of attorney? Oh, and wait, there's more before you ask your question.
If you have a power of attorney and it's not registered, you're saying it's not effective at all?
Under the old statute, no. The new statute that just came out a couple of years ago, it's deemed to be, there's a presumption that it's valid, but good luck using it at a bank or anywhere else without it being recorded as registered deeds. They're not going to let you do it. They're not going to honor it. You've got to take it to court and make them honor it and then argue, yeah, but the new statute says there's this presumption. Okay? Might as well just play ball and record it. And also, to do anything with real estate, it has to be recorded. Anything with real estate would have to be recorded in that register, in the county register. Okay? Because that's where your real estate deeds reside. What's that?
Is that across all states?
I just know North Carolina law. Okay? All 50 states are really different. Like Louisiana is Napoleonic Code. I don't know that. Okay? And I know North Carolina law really well. Right? So yes, they differ from state to state. Laws differ from state to state. Last but not least, I'll point out just the complexity of some of the decisions we make when drafting the power of attorney. Should I limit my agent to not transferring any assets if it benefits them? So I give an agent the ability to step in for me and do whatever is needed. But if they needed to transfer assets, or they needed to get gifts or do anything, I should probably write it, right? So that they can't benefit. Like the agent can't benefit from that process, right? What do you think?
Good idea.
Good idea. I heard a good idea.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. Tell me why.
Because if you 100% trust the person, they're still going to act in your best interest.
What if the person's your wife? You telling me my wife could give gifts or move money to anybody on planet Earth but herself from my account, my retirement account or anything else? Yeah, you really handcuff somebody. Let's say your benefit plan. And maybe, I don't know, you figure out, oh my gosh, you know, just like like he was saying earlier, spent millions of dollars on dad's kitchen, right? And, you know, you're like, man, this is really draining our assets here. And there's a benefit over here that we pay for the same thing. But we'd have to do some rearranging of assets, and we can save all those for the healthy spouse, for the community spouse. But unfortunately, the power of attorney restricts the community, the agent, from benefiting in any way from that circumstance. So he or she just is bound to watch that, to ride that thing into the ground, you know, the assets. So certainly questions that even attorneys, especially attorneys who don't practice what I do all the time, certainly good questions to ask. And when you think you're doing the right thing sometimes, and it sounds really, because it sounded really good when I said it, I led you a little bit when I said it. So I'm looking there. But, you know, it's actually, you know, when you think about it, would you like to be in that situation with your husband? No, that'd be horrible. You'd figure it out. Then you'd be like, wait a second.
You can't do anything.
I can give people, I can give anybody, I can give Bobby and Susie stuff or move things around, but not to myself, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, want to think about those things when we're drafting those docs. Yes, ma'am?
Can you, since you have an attorney that, dual doctor, how about a secondary, somebody in other words, since you have two in that position?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of having a substitute to bring in, somebody, you know, on the bench that can step in. I'd like for something like that we draft to last for the rest of your life, no matter what happens to the primary person. But that would mean you'd need to have two people that you really trust, right? If you appoint someone on the same level more than one person that can act, then, you know, they need to certainly be able to get along, you know, be of one mind and help make decisions together. The reason I say you'd want them to be able to make decisions independently as well is banks stopped recognizing them a couple of years ago, wrongly so under the law, but they don't want to be liable because one of your agents came to the bank and did one thing, the other agent wasn't there to approve, and a bank never let them do it, okay? So if you draft them where they have to act together, banks don't like those. They make it very hard for you to use them, okay? I can tell you. I know. Because I experience dealing with that all the time. Yes, ma'am.
My husband has dementia.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I am his power of attorney.
Financial or healthy?
Financial and health care.
Okay. Financial and healthy.
So I have, you know, his papers are registered.
The financial power of attorney is filed at the register of deeds.
Now, I have a power of attorney, and it's my son,
okay,
and then my daughter.
Phenomenal.
Does that one have to be recorded?
To you, for them to be able to use it, you need to record it in the registry.
But
it's just at home for somebody, right?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I thought that if I come to the point where I really need that then that's when it's registered, but it should be registered.
Do they know that? Do they know? I mean, you know.
Well, my son is a trustee. We don't trust.
Do they know that they're appointed as your agent?
Yes.
Good. So you communicated with them.
Right. But it's not registered with the county.
I mean, estate planning works like everything works better with communication, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they know where it is, things
right.
like that.
Does it have to be registered?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of going ahead and filing those for a number of reasons. Go to the register of deeds, pay the filing fee in whatever county in which you live. Or you can come to our office, and we'd be glad to help. Okay, we can do that. Zach knows. How do we do that, Zach? Do we leave our chairs to do that?
No, we do all from the computer.
That's right.
And are you a member of our county now?
Yes.
It's $64 every for that item.
How much?
$64.
How much they charge? It depends on the number of pages. I don't know how many yours it is. It could be more or less. Okay. $64 more or less.
It's an interesting question.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, he's still there. So that's a good question. He's asking a great question. You know, does your husband have a secondary in that power of attorney?
I believe so. Our son.
Yeah, the son. Okay. Plus, another thing you might want to have in that document is what I draft is the agent. If you couldn't do that and you wanted to transfer that agency to someone else,
the trustee?
The agency under power of attorney. That's what it's called. That's what the statute calls someone who's acting as someone else. If I have a power of attorney, that's the document, and I appoint you to handle my financial affairs, you're my agent.
Okay.
Okay? Right? So if you don't want to
I
do
am
it,
my husband's then, agent. Yeah. My son
is the secondary.
Is my agent. But right. I don't use him yet because I'm still capable.
And your son's the secondary in yours, right?
My son. I mean,
and your husband's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Very good point. Thank you. What's your name? Thanks, Tom. Right. So, any other questions on financial power of attorney?
I have just one.
Yes.
Just on the will,
probably.
Well,
we'll come to wills in just a second. Okay. We're going to get to the wills. Wills are next. Okay.
Well, power of attorney, does that always have to be filed with the court of deeds?
Register of deeds?
Yeah.
To use it, the agent's going to need it to be filed. That's a yes. At a bank or to do anything else. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
It has to be filed.
There's two questions there. Yeah. Legally, it doesn't have to be now. But they're not going to let you use it because they're so used to that. That's the way it is. Okay? That's just practically how it is.
So even though I'm still capable of doing all my financial
sure.
affairs,
yeah.
I should still have it registered.
You don't have to. But if you do and you lose it, what's the great thing about it having filed it being filed with the Register of Deeds? Is you can always get a certified true copy that's just the same as the original. I'm a huge advocate of recording those registered deeds.
Okay.
Agree. And see, here's a misconception. Here's a misconception. So you feel that in some way you would be losing power by disclosing that power return. Would you be losing any ability to handle your affairs?
No.
No. You would actually be adding power because you'd be adding a couple other guns out there. Right, that can do that action for you, right? If you need it, that can take care of that for you if you needed it. Right?
So I don't have power. My son is the power of attorney for me,
yeah.
But it's not registered. So if something happens to me and I lose my mind or whatever,
yeah.
I get dementia,
yeah.
You would then have to register it?
Agreed.
Okay, so I should do it now, period.
Yeah. That would be my advice if I were advising you.
Okay, I hear you.
But I'm not your attorney. But as your estate planning event conductor, I would say, yeah, I'd probably do that. Okay. So next, a healthcare power of attorney. Okay. Also, extremely, should I appoint someone to handle my important healthcare affairs, my life and death healthcare situations, if I can't speak for myself at that point?
Yeah.
That would be also extremely important. Healthcare powers of attorney, only the agents that you appoint only have the power to make healthcare decisions for you. If you can't make them for yourself, it's your body, it's your decisions, until you can't make them, okay, only, right? So, should I have maybe a backup then?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, be smart. If you have someone you trust to make your healthcare decisions, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I have 6 kids. I'm going to keep talking about that.
You're covered.
Am I covered? Because I picture I'm laying there, and some important decision needs to be made, and I'm in some kind of pain, and I'm like, please, just make the decision. And they're fighting about it, and they're rolling around the floor. And as I've seen, and I've done this for a long time, you know, really the way I describe my kids, the little ones and the bigs, as families age and grow, even through decades, they don't get much different, okay? Maybe they fight a little different, right? But they just agree more eloquently, or maybe not. Sometimes they're nasty. You know, it's just it's really in estate planning. It's a great time to be a little selfish or selfful. How about that? Make decisions for yourself. Appoint the right person that's going to make the great healthcare decision for you, and care for you. Continuity of care. Make sure you're cared for in the right way, as opposed to just being really nice and appointing all 6 kids. Right? No. Do not do that. I mean, that would be absolute chaos. I mean, my recommendation is one person, one person, one. a quarterback who can huddle up with the team and then, you know, then run the play into the doctor or the nurse or the staff or whatever it is. Okay.
Well, I have my three kids. I have my son,
yeah,
my daughter, and then my other
son. Good. Good for you. That's awesome. I applaud that. That was wise. And, you know, so I think also we would want to have HIPAA authorizations built in those documents so those people you appoint can pull medical records if need be. Good luck getting someone's medical records without HIPAA authorizations. HIPAA authorizations, Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1997, I think. So after that, it becomes extremely hard to get medical records, unless you can, unless you get a court order or you get permission through a HIPAA authorization. So you'd want to make sure that was built into that healthcare power of attorney as well. Healthcare power of attorneys can do a lot of things.
I don't know if I have that in there.
I would doubt.
You doubt it?
I doubt it. Well, but I'd be glad to look at it, and I'll give you an honest opinion. If it's there, I'll say, hey, there it is.
Why? Why would you doubt it? That's not usual.
When did you have it drafted?
It'll be a year in May.
Maybe you do have it in there. Okay. I should not be a doubting Thomas. Sorry.
But right. Is this something new?
That's Tom's show.
Is this something new?
What?
This is something new?
It's not new. No, it's not new.
But a lot
it's new-ish.
But a lot of people don't include it.
Well, most healthcare powers of attorney I read don't have it. Yeah.
Really?
Correct. Those don't have, these do not have to be recorded in a registered deeds, by the way. But it might be a good idea to have your physician have those on file. Sometimes the hospitals will keep them, you know. So, very important note. Anybody have any more questions on healthcare pharmacy?
So why would we need health records? Are they not available through the hospital? I'm a little confused.
They would be.
On that.
Sure. But if I'm incapacitated, incompetent, and I'm in the hospital, I can't get my own medical records. Who's going to get
the doctor that's seeing you?
Yeah, the doctor The doctor can see your medical records.
Right.
Right. What if a family member needed to pull those medical records for any reason? What if your healthcare agent needed to pull those medical records for some reason? There could be a lot of reasons. Tell me, what do you think? Why might be some reasons why your healthcare agent that you appointed might want to see your medical records?
Malpracticing.
Could be. Yeah, all right. That's one reason. What's another reason?
Deciding whether to pull the plug or not.
Maybe just to really look at the records. Maybe get a second opinion, maybe.
Right.
Something like that.
Outside.
Other specialists. Right.
If they got to look at my records to pull my plug, I don't want them being my power of attorney. Thank you.
Right. Right. I'd hope your doctor would look at those records before he advised.
True that.
Yeah.
True that.
Maybe your agent.
Just make sure I'm dead.
Maybe I just want to look at billing.
Donate the rest of me wherever
maybe
you
Maybe I
want to
look at billing. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe I want to find out why the aspirin costs $450. I don't know. And there could be a lot of reasons why I would want to look at those or want to get through those or question treatment or, you know, there's a lot of things, you know. But you can't do that unless you have a HIPAA authorization. Yes.
Can the doctor speak to the agent without the HIPAA authorization?
No. Not without, well, yes. Yes, if you're appointed health care agent, yes. Okay. But can't give you the records.
Okay, so he can talk to you.
Agreed, yes. Yes.
But you can't.
I would agree, yes.
You need a secondary health care
opportunity? Well, I think having a backup is great in everything. Yes, if you have those people in your life that you trust, yes. I would agree with that. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Then a living will, which is horribly misnamed by some dumb attorney, to make it sound good. It's not about living, and it's not really a will. Like they're confused. It's like, I don't need a will. I've got a living will. Okay. So a living will is more aptly named a declaration for a desire for a natural death. Not to be confused with a DNR, which is totally different. If I'm terminal, incurable, in a persistent vegetative state, that means a long time, persistent vegetative state. It's my voice in the room when I can't speak. It's me telling the doctors, the facility, and my healthcare agent, if I'm in this situation and the only medical procedures that can be done are going to prolong my suffering, It's okay to let me go. That's what a living will is. Which is not a DNR. Because with a DNR, that means if I had a DNR and I had a heart attack right now, then I don't want to be revived, resuscitated, right? Do not resuscitate. That's not what a living will is. A DNR is a medical document between you and your doctor. Okay. A living will, declaration for desire for natural death, is for that situation. You hope you're never in, but if you've ever had to decide that and let a family member go, make that decision as an next of kin or healthcare agent, it's tough. It sticks with you. So it's both a legal and practical document. Because I would hope that, my kids might have a hard time pulling the plug on that, but it might be the best for dad if that was done. I certainly, for me, I would want to give them guidance as well. And that's another thing a living will does. Also, a living will is a place where you might want to put any religious requests that you might have. I have Catholic clients who, we want to make sure last rites and Eucharist are administered prior to letting someone go. And, there's all kinds of things you might want to program in there. But that is a living will, a declaration for a desire for a natural death. Okay? Anybody have any questions about that?
You have to register that?
No.
No, you don't. But you should have it recorded at the hospital, correct?
Yeah, if they'll take it and keep it on file.
Yeah, I'm going through that right now.
Yeah.
If you want to donate your body to science, does it need to be in there?
That's the healthcare power of attorney. That's some of the things the healthcare power of attorney can do. The healthcare power of attorney can say what you want done with your remains, right? You want to donate your body to science? You want to be an organ donor? The healthcare power of attorney is where we state that. If you want, your healthcare agent to be able to also handle burial, funeral, things like that, or you demand cremation, that's where we place those things. Okay.
Question, going
yes.
back to the healthcare power of attorney. If you are someone's agent for that, and I can't remember specifically you talked about to put in that, but I know that paperwork has been assigned to the doctor's offices that I do have access to the HIPAA. So does it need to be also in the healthcare power of attorney of all your doctors that they're to the army?
Absolutely. And here's why. Because I don't know, they may assign a specific health records release or records access at a physician, but there may be other specialists or physicians that release is only specific to that doctor or that group of doctors. They could be in a different hospital. There could be a number of different variables there. Okay. And the healthcare power of attorney grants access to that agent no matter what hospital, what doctor, if you're traveling, anything, right? So that's one. That's why I said it. Yes, ma'am. Good question. And last but not least, the last will and testament. Okay? And I know she wanted to talk about the will. So I hope she'll be back soon. Her pocket looks still there, so I'm sure she's going to. So the last will and testament. Okay? You guys know what a will is, right? We need to talk about that. What's a will?
Leave your belongings to your family.
What about I don't like my family. I want to leave my family. To whomever you want. It's your stuff, right? You can do whatever you want to with it, right? To change title to assets, okay? And you can run personal property without title through there as well. So wills, last will and testaments have worked fairly well. Thousands of years. Talk about wills in the Bible. And the ancient Greeks had spoken wills. The Romans, it's like a council of seven, you would
talk about what, how you wanted to dispose of assets. I'm sure that went down really well. Like seven different people hearing it, remembering it different ways. I'm sure that wasn't a nightmare, right? And then, through kind of the English legal development of the English legal system a bit, now to what we have today in North Carolina, in America. So, but you know, we talked about early on, there are some pitfalls to wills, the timeline of probate. First, your will has to be drafted correctly to be probated. Okay? Can't tell you how many wills I see that are not probatable. The clerks and the courts will not accept them because they do not meet the statutory standards of what a will should be. Can I get an amen, Jessica Kramer, who is on our in our probate department?
Yes, lots of wills.
So Jessica, come up here with me. And I want you to speak loud and proud to me, okay? So she's in our probate department.
So I see.
Step out in front, sir.
So I see the wills when they come in, and you know, family members are like, "Hey, I have a will," and first you're like, "Great, this will make it easier."
Well, maybe their loved one had a will,
right?
Because that person died.
Right. So whoever
if that person is there with the will, call me in the room or run. Or
something. Right. You gotta run. But if they have a person who passed had a will, you know, you might think, it's easier, but you get to look at it and always get an attorney's second opinion. But if it doesn't meet the requirements, we have to go what we call intestate, which just means it kind of goes down the line of, you know, whoever. So you don't get to decide. So you really have to make sure that your will is up to standard. I mean, if it's with Greg, he's great. I don't just say that, but, you know, really make sure that will is in place because you don't know what could happen tomorrow. That's what I run into a lot, is people weren't expecting something to happen, right? So they didn't have
Or they took shortcuts. That's what I see most of the time.
Right. And they said, I can just write this really quick while I'm sick.
Janky will. They just,
right. I see a lot of those handwritten.
The problem is you have... Thank you, Jessica. I appreciate it. The will has to be written correctly. You know, it has to have proper witnesses, notaries. It needs to be self-proving. Right? You know that, Jessica, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the clerks will kick it back, right? Which means if it's not a self-proving will, then you got to track down the witnesses and have them sign affidavits or come to court and testify that they saw you sign it, line of sight, right? And that their signatures have to be notarized, right? It has to have certain language in the will to make it self-proving or a self-proving affidavit. We're talking about wills, man. Dan, I know you had some questions.
I do. I have a question.
Yes.
I had a will drawn up by an attorney.
Yes.
And after it was drawn and I signed and everything, does that automatically get filed with the clerk of deeds or clerk of county clerk?
Clerk of court.
Yeah.
Yes, courts. Wills go through the courts. Absolutely.
Did he just automatically do that?
No, he did not. Do you know why?
No, why?
Because you can't file a will until someone's dead. You are very much alive. Okay, and I appreciate you being here with us. All right. So you can't file a will until somebody passes away. Right? So we also see that all the time. Is okay, well, I'm here, there's a copy of the will. Where's the original? You have to file the original will. Okay.
I think I have my original.
Good. You have the original? Good.
So.
Good. Thank you. Well, you brought it with you. You are prepared.
Really. The only reason I brought it, what happened is something came up in my life and I decided to have a little chat with this lawyer.
Sure.
Lo and behold, he retired.
Lawyers should never be allowed to retire.
Please be gracious enough to send your letter saying that.
He should have sent you the letter.
I could not find
Thank you, ma'am.
So anyhow, I called your office. And it said, John Smith Real Estate. Well, I know you have a real estate office.
Sure.
And I was looking for money. Well, he retired, and I said, he did. Well, you know, I had a real estate. Well, this is so and so, and we're real estate lawyers.
Yeah.
Now, I said, real estate lawyer, if I have to help somebody out to do with the regulation, will. So I didn't even want to go there. So I just got my paperwork, and now I'm looking for somebody else to help me.
Well, I wish you luck in your quest. If I see an estate planning or elder law attorney, I'll let you know. You're getting hot, okay? You're pretty warm right now. So good. Well, thank you for telling me that. Thank you. Make sure you put that will in a safe place. But if you want, I review documents all the time, right? I'd be glad to review it with you.
Yeah, I will at some point, but not tonight.
Well, of course, not tonight. Yes, ma'am.
But I'm the attorney, just in case.
You guys, you just hang out for a little bit. I don't know if you all heard of legal. Another time, okay? All right. So last will and testaments. Sure, that could be the best place to pass your assets. It could be. If you don't have people that are going to fight over property, that are going to, you know, the ways to pick apart wills, there are many. I'm fairly decent at doing that. When I sit down with a document, I can pick it apart pretty well. You know, sometimes there's claims that people weren't confident when they signed estate planning documents, or claims of undue influence from family members and having those things written up and carried out. So certainly they're important documents to have, okay? But the conversation needs to be had as to whether that's the best place to pass your assets or not. Wills do have to go through the probate process. I tell people minimum of 6 months, unless there's other problems or the courts are dragging their feet behind, okay, to get that done. Okay. There are ways to, as you pointed out earlier, sir, instantly pass assets if you pass away. One way is deed protection. Things that some folks are really concerned about that I meet with is protecting their home, right? How many people here have a home? And sometimes that's a large asset for them, okay? And deeds can be used to pass assets outside of probate. And deeds can be used to still keep you in control of your home. And deeds can be used to protect your home against a Medicaid recovery if they have to pay for long-term care. And there are deeds in North Carolina that can be drafted that don't affect your ability to apply for Medicaid or long-term care, to pay for long-term care, even if you put them on the house within what's called a look-back period for that benefit. So within 5 years of accessing that benefit, okay? So there's cool deeds that can help do all those things and protect your home. One thing that people ask is, well, you know, what age should I give my home to my children or my real estate to my children? I don't like that question because I think that you should stay in control of assets during your life. That, I would like for that to be the solution. Plus, when you give your house away to someone else, you don't own it or control it anymore. And, you know, I just think the kids are nicer to mom and dad, and you still own anything. You still have leverage. And I don't want to get kicked out of my house. I've had those phone calls before. Life estate deeds. I'm not a huge fan of giving away your property. Okay? That's not what it's about. I'll do it if you make me, but I'll counsel you not to. Okay? Because there's other ways to do it. Traditional life estate deeds, those are deeds where you stay in control of the property during your life, and then let's say your kids automatically get whatever property, any property, could be your home, other real estate, when you pass away. Automatically, when you pass away. Okay? Those are traditional life estate deeds. If long-term care might be an issue or paying for that might be an issue in the future or near future, say within the next 5 years, then this would be a countable asset transfer under those, say, Medicaid rules to pay for nursing home care. So I would not want to use a life estate deed in that situation. But they are great for planning on a large scale. A Ladybird deed or enhanced life estate deed, that's a pretty popular deed at our office, just for the home. A Ladybird deed is built off the framework of a life estate deed, but it doesn't count as a countable asset transfer
if you have to apply for a benefit to pay for long-term care. So they're okay with the fact that you have a Lady Bird deed and that you've done that even within the look-back period window. And it protects the home and any surrounding property, okay? Any contiguous or touching property. And then we'd give it, say, for example, to whomever you wanted to, but usually it's the kids, if you were to pass away. And you control the home for the rest of your life. It's yours. Yes, ma'am.
Is that better than a trust?
Depends. Let's say we went into a, what kind of trust? An irrevocable or revocable trust? Because we'll talk about those later. So an irrevocable trust is not an accountable asset to you. It belongs to the trust, to the third party trustee. But then you're not in control of the asset, which might be okay, because there, you might be a lifetime beneficiary from income from the trust, from, say, investments or rents from real estate.
I would be.
Well, the grantor, the person who made the trust would be.
I made the trust.
Yes. My guess is, and I don't want to necessarily delve too deep into your legal issues or personal issues at the table with family, you know, with everybody else, but I would, I don't know. My guess is it's a revocable living trust. Okay, you're the trust maker, you're the trustee, right?
No, my son is a trustee.
Your son is a trustee. You're not in charge of your own trust. Okay, it may be irrevocable.
Irrevocable, it is.
Good. If irrevocable, your son's a trustee, it would not be considered your asset. And if you had to apply for a benefit to pay for a long-term care, you know, for assisted living, nursing home care down the road, then you would have had to have gone into that trust with the assets that you don't want to be counted as yours outside of the look-back window,
right,
which is 3 years for assisted living, 5 years for nursing home care.
And 3 years for the VA as well.
And 3 years for VA as well. You're not wrong. And that was just instituted on November 28, 2018. It used to be, before that, there was no look-back period for VA. And I'm a certified attorney from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So we deal with those benefits.
So can I ask you, my husband had a will done in 2012.
Sure.
And so he's not capable of making decisions anymore?
Sure.
On his POA.
Yes.
So, does that will still count, his will?
The will's not going to not count.
It still counts. What he wrote, what he wants, it still counts. When he did it?
Yeah, assuming the will is probatable, it would still be his will, yes.
Hmm.
Right, and a power of attorney, right, again, a will only has power when you die. Power of attorney only has power while you're alive, right? So I'd be glad to take a look at the whole picture, okay? So
let me ask you a question.
Yes.
If you do this Lady Bird deed on your home,
mm-hmm,
does that mean it immediately, like, you don't have
to? It is immediately protected.
It's immediately protected.
Yeah, but not wait 5 years. Immediately protected. That's correct. And that's one reason you might want to do a Lady Bird deed. If your home was not in an irrevocable trust already, yours might already be, right? So you might be good to go, okay? But you don't have control of it. I mean, your son, who you can trust, has a legal fiduciary duty to maintain it for the rest of your life, right? But if you want to stay in control of the asset, pass it to kids outside of probate, and protect it from Medicaid recovery if something happened later, that's how you do it. That is one way to do it. Sir.
So
any other questions on Lady Bird? Yes.
The Lady Bird deed is only for housing, property?
It's only for your primary residence. Your primary residence and any surrounding contiguous property. That's correct. Not for your beach house or the land you own in the other part of the county, right?
Right.
For a rental or anything. Only for the primary residence.
Land that goes with the primary residence also.
Oh, yes. Yes. And there are other deed protections that are similar that can be done on other real estate that is not the primary residence. Okay? We do that all the time.
How much does it cost just to get a Lady Bird deed done?
Well, it depends on what it is.
Oh.
Depends on how many properties there are, right? It costs a heck of a lot less than losing your house.
Oh, yeah. I would hope.
So trust. You were talking about trust, right?
It's nominal. It's a nominal fee. Okay, so it's less than trust, right?
Yeah. So you just said on how many properties, but then you said that's only on the house that is occupied.
I did, but you can have multiple tracts of land that are contiguous and touching, even if divided by roads, right?
But it's basically in the same general area.
Not general area. It has to be contiguous and touching.
Contiguous.
That's what contiguous means. Like that.
Right.
Butt it up against each other.
Right.
That's right.
So if there's different homes on it that fall.
Doesn't matter what's on it. Yeah. It could be a skyscraper on it if you live there.
Got
it. You guys?
Got it.
All right. Thank you for your question. Keep going with it. So trust. Trust are great. Awesome. Trust can do a ton of things. Trust can stand on their head. You can make your estate plan stand on its head. From top down, kind of how the screen there, people you can see it. Revocable, irrevocable. We started to touch on it, right? Said, hey, there's irrevocable trust. They have third-party trustees, right? You have to go through your trustee to do anything with your assets. Revocable trust, you are in charge of everything in the trust. You are the trust maker, you are the trustee. Everything in a trust avoids probate. Trust can house any asset. An illustration of a trust is this glass of water that Ryan is drinking. Ryan is the brother of my law partner. And he works with our firm as well. Well, kind of. But he's hanging out with me. So, Ryan, this is a trust, okay? This is your irrevocable trust. This is your glass of water. You made it. But I have it, and I'm in control of it. And I can pour it out when I need to, okay? It can hold anything. A trust is a container. A trust can hold an unlimited, can hold every parcel of land on earth if you titled all those parcels into the name of the trust. It can hold an unlimited number of bank accounts or financial assets. An irrevocable trust would give me a legal fiduciary duty to act in the best interest of Ryan. He can be a lifetime beneficiary, income beneficiary, so he can drink water out of this cup the rest of his life. And then in the end, everything is going to flow according to the story he's written outside of probate and outside of the courts. And his trustee is going to do that. If I'm still alive and I'm his trustee, I have a legal fiduciary duty to do that according to his wishes. And a lot of times that's, well, it's called trust administration, and a lot of times that's done along with the help of an attorney like myself, right? But it's a much quicker process, right? The speed of the probate process might be how quick I get the deeds drafted and signed by the trustee, right? Out to where they need to go. Or I might want to force the sale of my home because I don't want my knucklehead kids to fight over what happens to the house, and I just want to split out the money six ways, right? Which would probably be advisable in my situation. A revocable trust, Ryan, could you stand up for me? This is Ryan's revocable living trust, okay? Ryan's revocable living trust, he made it, he owns it, he is in control of it, he can drink water out of it, he can toss the water out the door, he can break the trust, he can revoke it, right? It's his. Because he is in control of it, and he's the trustee and the grantor, the trust maker. If you had to qualify for a benefit like Medicaid to pay for assisted living or nursing home care, the government would deem that that's Ryan's assets, everything in his revocable living trust. If that's never going to be an issue, if you have long-term care insurance or your money's long enough, that's not a concern. Revocable living trust have a lot of options and advantages. And he still controls it, right? That's perfect. We also draft a trust called a convertible trust. You know, it'll start here. It starts off revocable. It's Ryan's trust. You know, it's at a certain age, or if he feels like he's going through some rough waters health-wise, he's concerned that he might hit long-term care in the next few years. He's just not sure about how things might go. You know, he and his wife are talking about it. You know, they want to make this thing irrevocable. So they have a convertible trust. He decides to flip the switch, make it irrevocable. Now I'm the trustee, and starts the clock ticking the look-back clock ticking on all the assets in that trust, so that when he needs that care, he has the option to look at that benefit, right? That's a plan ahead tool, okay? Also, trust, you know, Ryan is so rich that he's worried about estate and death tax, okay? Ryan, are you worried about estate and death tax?
Yes.
Very much so. So he doesn't want to get his estate cut in half because he goes over the estate and death tax exemption. Trusts are very good. They're great at doubling the estate and death tax exemption, regardless of the type of trust, revocable or irrevocable. Okay? So trust can avoid the estate and death tax exemption, regardless of what that number is when you pass away. And that's a moving target, depending on where the government is looking for money and the administration and that philosophy. Okay? That changes throughout time. All right? So trust can double that exemption. Okay? So probate avoidance, asset protection, liability protection, because assets are in the trust name and not your personal name. So there's a shield of liability protection there. Also, maximizing or exceeding the estate and death tax exemption for he and his wife. Okay? Trusts are great at doing things over time. So you can hold assets in trust and get, and set up trusts that feed your family, that help your kids or grandkids go to college, right, for health, education, welfare. Maybe not give them a lump sum when they're 18, because I would have done something stupid at 18 with a bunch of money. I know I would have had a ton of fun, but it would have been, at this point in my life, I would have looked back and like, I was kicking this podium at how I had blown all that money, right? After I got out of rehab, right, or something, you know? And I would have done something really redneck. Like, I just picture myself driving a Lamborghini in Myrtle Beach. Maybe with big tires. I don't know why there's like monster truck tires in Lamborghini. Because I had the money and I was 18. And all my friends were with me too, okay? So yeah, if you don't want your grandkids driving Lamborghinis in Myrtle Beach with their friends with them, blowing all your money, you know, you could maybe help send them to college, incentivize that, and then string that money out to come to them, maybe starting at 25, 10% over the next 10 years. You can set it up however you want, okay? Trusts are great at that as well, all right? So a lot of benefits to trust, and certainly a plan ahead tool and a probate avoidance tool and a tax avoidance tool. Gotcha. Yes, ma'am.
I understand that the irrevocable trust cannot be changed at all.
It's irrevocable.
Right.
Unless all parties agree and sign off on it.
Okay.
So they can be changed, but all your beneficiaries, the trustee, and you as the trust maker would have to sign off on the change. Okay. Then they can be changed.
Okay.
Okay.
And so if I can talk to you again.
If the assets that stay in the trust are the same, right? No. It would still be irrevocable. If somehow she took an asset out and put it back in or something, then yes, I think. If she took back ownership of an asset personally, then I think it would. Yes, ma'am. Good question.
So revocable is subject to the 5-year look back and irrevocable is not?
Okay. So irrevocable, both are. Now, on one hand, the revocable trust is just still your asset, right? And it's just yours.
Right.
You so, still have it.
So it's yours, so it's something to the 5-year look back.
Well, so the 5-year look back is in consideration of transfer of assets, okay? Right?
Yeah.
So you haven't transferred any assets. It's just your asset. So, you know, if you went in and applied for a benefit, then you'd probably have too many assets or maybe not. In the right place, okay, under the rules. And I know that if there's anything I like to do, it's play complicated games. And the Medicaid game is a complicated game.
Yeah.
But we play that very well, and I have for a long time. So there are many ways to activate that benefit and still retain control of assets under their rules. And you have to show Medicaid everything you've done. Okay, to pay for assisted living or nursing home care. But if you keep the asset personally or in a revocable living trust, it's still just your asset. So you're probably not going to qualify, not under the look-back period, just because you have too many assets, right? Now, if you look back period, what they look at is the transfer of any assets within that time period. All they can see back is 3 years for assisted living, 5 years for nursing home Medicaid. Okay. Assisted living is really special assistance. That's not Medicaid. It's a different program. But long-term care Medicaid pays for nursing home care. That's 5 years in that period. So you either have to have your assets shifted around in the shelf game prior to the 5 years, or correctly, right? Or you have to make those shifts under their rules to be able to still keep the asset qualified for the benefit, which there's a number of ways to do that. There's almost a limitless. I'm sure there's a mathematical point where there's, I can't come up with another plan, but certainly a lot of plans that I could come up with. And then I try to present the most straightforward and simplest two or three. Lately, it's been one or two. But used to, I would do much more complicated planning. And the Department of Health and Human Services or Social Services would look at me and be like, what? What did you do, Greg? No, it works, because look, it does this, you know. Yeah. So I'd have to draw them out on postboard. I've done that before. There's a number of ways to qualify for benefits, veterans or otherwise, even under the look-back period. Better to plan ahead. The revocable trust, yes, you're right, subject to the look-back period. The transfer into the revocable trust is a transfer of assets from you personally into the irrevocable trust. That would need to be done outside of the look-back window. But again, if it's an irrevocable trust, it would still lock after the 3 years or 5 years, and which would end the outflow of monies to pay for care if you were then qualified for another benefit that would step in and pay. How about that?
Okay. So, and I know we're getting all the weeds here on these things, but
yeah,
it's never been really clear to me. So,
sure.
Once you're past that 5 years, whatever is in either one of these trusts is protected. You don't have to send that all down before you
get the revocable living trust is still your asset. So it's not either one of these trusts. The revocable living trust is your asset. It's treated as your asset.
So you have to spend it.
It's not protected in any way.
Okay.
No, not necessarily. You probably come to some, we would sit down and say,
there are other
ways. Hey,
this is,
how do we do this in an emergency? That's what I call Medicaid crisis planning. And usually it's not, it's the crying wife, two out of three of the times, okay, that I sit down with. And I say that because us men check out first for some reason, right? And she's saying, look, my husband's in nursing home care. We both worked our whole lives. We're going to lose everything we work for because it costs $10,000 a month or something, right? And we don't have long-term care insurance, and I don't know what to do. You know? So I said, okay. So I go through what the assets are and the rules and come up with a plan, straightforward plan, to qualify for the benefit and save the assets. Costs a lot more to do that. Okay? And then we handle the applications and the qualifications. Okay?
So these, I'm
telling you, my sons, Jordan and Tucker, are in my head. Planning ahead.
Yep.
Versus cramming for the exam.
Right. So this alone doesn't protect your assets from disappearing in the nursing home. You got to do something else.
This alone, what does that mean?
Just having a trust.
A convertible trust that you can convert, yes, it does. An irrevocable trust, straight up irrevocable trust, like a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, absolutely it does. A revocable living trust is not in contemplation of Medicaid plan. And is not protected in that way because the government deems it your asset.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So trust planning is absolutely in contemplation of needing care or benefits. Why am I worried about nursing home or assisted living care? Why do I care about that?
It's really expensive.
Because your family spent millions of dollars on your dad's care. Because my grandfather lost the farm that I could be chilling out right now, growing some tomatoes, right? And I just never thought it was fair that he lost everything. And I get you need to pay for what you get. I understand it's a business. But I would bet you I've paid so much in taxes in my life and I'm still going to pay for that probably 10 times over. And then the government, to access a benefit that could pay for it, wants me to also lose my house in the end because you can keep one car, one house, $2,000 in the bank. That's what they say. But then they're going to get the house when it passes through the will because that's where the lien attaches.
and it's going to be sold to pay the lien. That's why a ladybird deed would save your house, because they can't get it when it passes outside of probate. And under their rules and under their policy, they allow for it, even within the look back.
So why would they let you do that?
Because they want to. It's their policy. It's not my magic wand that came up with that. Pretty good at discovering things, but it's there. It's in their policy. They allow for it. I even have to argue with them about their own rules sometimes and what they allow for. We do that. By arguing, I mean court proceedings, right? Yeah. Professionally pardon. Yes.
So I set up all my stuff, IRA, my house, everything in the herbal pool trust. And I retire.
Yes.
I need some money to live on.
Yes.
My daughter's my trustee. Can I have her say, look, I need $5,000 a month, send me a check for $5,000 a month?
You could, but I think there's probably a better way to do that for you, to keep you in control. All right.
I just don't want to look at that thing.
Yeah, I know. But I also want you to have plenty of money and be in control of your assets. There's plenty of ways to do that. Maybe a convertible trust is the answer. Mm-hmm. And then you choose an age when you make it irrevocable. And then she takes over that, right? Maybe maybe a ladybird deed on the home, you know? And then looking at some other options with cash and cash flow, right? You're a young lady. I'm serious. Okay. Yeah. I want you to have control of your assets. I don't want you to be so scared of that you're wanting to give up control now. Okay. I mean, convertible trust might be a good option. And there's a lot of options. There's a lot of tools in my tool bag. You just need to sit down and talk about that specific situation. Okay. So, yes, ma'am.
Can you explain a little bit about, you mentioned the income from the trust. What is that?
Trust income. Well, trust can make income just like an individual can. Let's say I had a piece of property that was a rental in a trust, and it kicked out rent. It was kicking out $1,000 a month, positive cash flow, maybe $1,500. I could just get that for the rest of my life. Same thing with dividends from stocks, things like that, income, interest.
So one of the things about the irrevocable trust that I was told was that at no time, any money that was supposed to be for the beneficiaries cannot come to me at all.
Yeah. I don't know that I agree with that. I don't know that I agree with that, but I could be glad to review your trust.
So like how...
I'd be glad to review your trust and tell you exactly what I think it does. Okay? And what you have access to. Okay? I'd be glad to do that, right? So, all right. I'm going to wrap this up here, okay? We can talk a little later, all right? So, these are some of our attorneys, okay? We have Nathan as well. He's not on the board. That's Ryan's brother, Brett. He's my law partner. All talented guys. We need some ladies in there, too. But, so that's some of our team. These are some more of our team. We have about 25 across three offices. We have an office in Charlotte, in Shelby, North Carolina, which is about 45 minutes an hour west, and then another 45 minutes an hour west in Hendersonville, which is a nice retirement suburb of Asheville. So, and then also, Ryan. One of the reasons Ryan here, I wanted to introduce him, is Ryan works with McIntyre Financial, which is a sister company to McIntyre Overall. And we talked about long-term care insurance a bit, and I always recommend that and refer that out to other people, people who are interested in that. If you're young enough to qualify or don't have health problems, long-term care insurance can be a godsend because it activates money to pay for, say, in-home care. And there's a lot of ways to get into long-term care insurance. There's life insurance for long-term care riders, which you can still control or cancel or pull back, that have beneficiaries. There's tons of different options. So Ryan does that. And I've envisioned that for a long time, that we would be able to help people on that side as well. And he just wanted to introduce himself and say a few words. And he'll be in the back of the room with Zach and with Jessica
at the end when we're done here in a few minutes, okay? If you wanted to talk to him about any financial or insurance things, okay?
Good evening. As you said, I'm Ryan Begley. My younger brother, much better looking, and he was on the TV out there. I do the financial part of the firm. I do insurance and financial planning. It's like, let's say your financial life is a journey. You know, you're going on this journey, and you'd like to know where the gas stations are. You know, you'd like to know where the restaurants are. You'd like to know where all the best places would be, you know, to make connections or anything else. That's what I do. I just open the doors to show you the best investments, what the best places to go, and the opportunities that are available to you, so you can maximize your money and help you retire or build your estate. So that's pretty much what I do. Starting the financial services. So y'all have any questions?
I appreciate you coming up and talking to us. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Ryan.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Ryan will be in the back of the room. If you want to talk insurance, long-term care, anything like that, Ryan's the guy, okay? That's all he does. Mm-hmm. So we covered a ton tonight. I do a lot of writing, talking. I run my mouth a little bit every once in a while, okay? Some people say I never shut up, but mainly the people I work with. You know, can I have that, Zach?
Absolutely.
You bring me that, maybe the magazine. And
yes, sir.
Yeah. I'll close this out.
Yes, sir.
All right. So, you know, I encourage every attorney in our firm to do writing. So I wrote a book a little while back called Saving the Farm. It's a little story about my grandfather, Papa Mac, and parlays into a little journey of estate planning. Covers a lot of the ground that we covered tonight, but goes into a lot more detail, okay? And there's, you know, it really took me about 6 months to polish off and finish this book, but I had to wait about 2.5 years to actually publish it because I was waiting on some interviews from experts around the country that I wanted to get, like Tipa Snow in the section on Alzheimer's dementia. I don't know if anybody's heard of Tipa Snow. She's excellent. Her content is amazing on Alzheimer's dementia care and what that journey is. So you can buy this on Amazon, but I would rather sign a book and give it to you tonight and save you $20, okay? So I know Zach and JK, Jessica Kramer, will have those in the back, along with copies of the Elder Law Report, which Elder Law Report is a contribution from all our attorneys on different issues, some changes in the law in estate planning in 2021, and also lots of pretty pictures, okay, to go along with shorter articles that really summarize a lot of what we're talking about. Also, I don't know, I think a map, I can tell you how to get somewhere, right? But I could more easily show you on a map. So we could talk all day about complex legal issues, but I'd rather give you the estate planning map. I have a trust map within that really talks about revocable versus irrevocable trust. And a ladybird deed map, which really shows you what a ladybird deed does. So I'd love to give you a copy of Saving the Farm and the magazine, The Elder Law Report, and also Zach, our consult fee, $150 generally.
Yes, sir.
What I'd like to do is waive our consult fee. If you want to sign up, and we talked about reviewing some documents, and we've answered a lot of questions, we've talked. Covered a lot of ground tonight. I think we covered a lot of ground in a short period of time. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, the best estate planning events are when people interact by far. So I'd be glad to sign a copy of Saving the Farm. I'd love to do that for you. Give you a copy of our magazine that has the maps. And, you know,
and waive the $150 consult fee for an appointment with me to sit down and really talk about your individual plan, what your needs are. In an hour or so, we can generally work through a ton. We cover a lot of ground tonight about that time. So just focusing individually on your assets, your goals, and how to accomplish those, and really protect assets, as we talked about in the beginning, to stay in control of those assets, and leave a legacy, if that's what you'd like to do. So I'd love to help with that. And I will be in the back with the books, the magazines, and Jessica and Zach will have the computers if you guys want to step to the back and take advantage of that free consultation. Okay, thank you very much for coming. I'm Greg McIntyre. Thank you very much.
We put off planning till things get slow. Tomorrow's never promised today. Don't get too busy and let it all slip away. Please don't wait till it's too late. Call McIntyre Everlove. Foundational planning or more complex, we can help when you're perplexed. If a loved one needs long-term care, we can help avoid some of the scare. Please don't wait till it's too late. Call McIntyre Everlove. Estate planning, benefits, and even probate, we take the planning piece off your plate. If you or your spouse were in the military, we can help with benefits for your family. Please don't wait till it's too late. Call McIntyre Elder Law.